I like a newspaper. I like a printed newspaper. I'm old. I like to feel it. I like the smell of it. I like to hold it in my hands. I like to see it. It's not digital, it's physical. But I'm old. Most people don't read newspapers anymore. In fact, most people under the age of 30 never read newspapers. The newspaper business is in trouble, particularly the local newspaper business, which is the source of news for many, many communities. In the last 10 years in the United States, more than 2,000 local newspapers have gone out of business. This is a big problem because functioning democracy requires a well-educated public, particularly about events in their community. I mean, things that happen in Ukraine are fine and interesting, but things that affect you personally in your town or your village or your county, you only find out, you can only make decisions about based on what you read in the local newspaper. And when local newspapers go out of business, you end up living in what's called a news desert. This is a real problem because good democracies, a working democracy, is dependent upon a well-educated and well-informed electorate. And if there's no newspaper, there's no way to be well-informed and well-educated about this. A lot of people have been grappling with this. The newspaper business went out of business after 250 years of being a very successful and profitable business because it simply, the business model no longer worked. I mean, this is the FT, which I like a lot. It costs £4.80 here in the UK, which is like $6 in America. $6 for a newspaper is a crazy amount to ask people to pay. Also, there's not a lot of advertising this thing because as the price gets higher and it gets more expensive, fewer and fewer people read it, and then advertisers aren't too attracted to it. So it's this death spiral that just goes around and around and around, and we'll see even more and more, particularly local newspapers closing in the near future. This is a very, very bad thing to happen. A lot of people are trying to figure out how to save this. And I recently read a piece by Leonard Downey in the Washington Post, a newspaper that's still in business and quite vibrant for a couple of reasons. And Downey was the editor of the Washington Post, and he gave some ideas about how to save particularly the local news business. I don't like them. The ideas pretty much were about nonprofit, which doesn't really work in the long run, or depending upon billionaires, which is what the Washington Post did. Jeff Bezos now owns it, and as an act of what we would call noblesse oblige, decides out of his good graces to support a newspaper. And that's a pretty good newspaper, but democracy can't depend upon the goodwill of a couple of billionaires, and it certainly can't depend upon funding for public nonprofit, and they're interesting, but it's not, it doesn't have a future. It's very difficult to depend on. What you need to make journalism and news work is a business model that actually works. And newspapers don't work. That's a difficult thing to say for people who grew up with newspapers and depend upon them, but it's actually true. The business model no longer works for a lot of reasons, mostly because the internet has eviscerated the primary source of revenue for newspapers, which was not subscription, but advertising. The advertising has gone. If you pick up a copy of the print copy of the New York Times, which I get in New York, there are no ads in it at all. And of course, they've moved everything to online, but that's another story entirely. The problem here is that almost nobody under the age of 30 reads newspapers, and even people my age, fewer and fewer people actually read newspapers because they're expensive. And the whole act of reading, the whole act of reading has gone, which is shocking, but quite true. According to the AC Nielsen Company, and they ought to know, the average American now spends 8 hours a day watching television or movies or video. I mean, it's shocking, but that's who we are. And if you look at things like TikTok or Instagram, they're all video. YouTube is video. Netflix is video. I mean, it's on your television, but it's actually video. It's an online video service. Amazon Video. We spend more time watching videos or movies or whatever, TV shows, than we do sleeping, eating, working. And the most depressing thing is reading, because the same statistic said the average American only spends 19 minutes a day reading. So the future of journalism, if you want to communicate with people and you want to share ideas with people, is in video, which is great. But if you think about local news television station, and we work with a lot of them, the conventional local news television station is a very expensive process to get the product in front of people. And you probably live in towns or cities where you've seen these crews come up with big cameras on their shoulders and a producer and an editor, sound guy and a reporter standing there with the microphone, which is great when, you know, the market is a big city. But it's very, very difficult for small towns that you support little tiny local newspapers. And that's the business that's dying, and that's where the news desert's actually taking place. So how can you do that? How can you restore great news and great journalism to small towns and villages that need it the most? And the answer is unlike Mr. Downey, it's not newspapers. You got to get rid of the paper part of this thing, but news, absolutely. And the trick here is to build news networks, television in the broadest sense of the word, that function in a very, very different way. And the way that this works is that your iPhone or a smartphone, if you have an iPhone or smartphone, I think 3.7 billion people now have them, they shoot broadcast quality video, they edit, they add music, they add graphics. They're fantastic tools for journalists to tell stories. That is really all it's about. And of course, the internet gets rid of this barrier to entry, which networks used to have, which was, you know, owning a cable system or having a satellite or owning an FCC license for a broadcast. Anybody can put any video online. And with a phone, a journalist can create compelling video stories. And video, for better or for worse, is the lingua franca of our society. It's the way that we communicate ideas with each other. So instead of, I mean, I understand this romantic notion of buying a printing press and starting a local small town newspaper, but that is a crazy way to go. That's because physically, it costs a lot to make this thing every single day on a piece of paper and get it in people's hands. Instead, the trick to making local television news and journalism work is to replace local newspapers, and this will be traumatic for local papers to hear, replace them with online video news channels, network services. In the world of nonlinear, you don't have to broadcast 24 hours a day. You can put up an hour's worth of stuff and just keep repeating it over and over again. That works just fine. It's very successful. How good can the stuff be made with a phone? Because most people think of a phone as what you see on YouTube. It's very messy and stuff like that. Well, of course, we're in the business of training journalists to work and make great news stories, great journalism, just with nothing but their phone. And you can do this if you train people in how to use the phone and how to tell stories in a very compact and economic way using the phone to communicate ideas with journalism. It's very, very doable, and you already have all the equipment that you need. With your phone, I like to say this, I don't know if this number is exactly right, your phone gives you the same firepower that CNN or ABC or NBC has, and they spend millions and millions of dollars to get there, and you already own it. You can shoot stories, you can cut them, you can edit them, you can add music, you can graphics, you can go live, you can put them on the air. This is the content. The essence of journalism, the value of journalism, is in the content. It's in the reporting, it's in the quality of the reporting, it's in the storytelling, and it's getting that stuff in front of people so that they can watch it or read it or watch it. And now it's really about watch it. And so small town papers could, even the ones that have died, could be restored. Small town could make news channels. Channel is an abstract word, online sites, but purely in video. Just do it in video, that's all you have to do. And you can make, because the cost of doing this is so little, and the opportunity is so enormous because the technology has completely changed. A lot of newspapers, when they're in trouble, the first thing they do is they fire the reporters. They cut back on the staff, because that's the biggest expense they have. That's a mistake. The only product that a journalistic institution has, whether it's the New York Times or ABC or whomever, is the stories that the reporters and the journalism the reporter brings to the table. So the trick here is to empower journalists to tell stories in this very, very powerful medium, and now it's very inexpensive to do, and you can do it. And how good can the stories be? I want to show you an example. We've been working with Spectrum over the last 7 years. We've trained almost 1,100 of their journalists to work in this way, using nothing but iPhones. So this is a local news story of a small bookstore that closed in Austin, Texas, and it was done by Robbie Vaughn, who went through one of our boot camps. This is done only on an iPhone in one day. It's fantastic reportage, and it actually makes things that people actually want to watch. So take a look at this. This is what one trained journalist can do with an iPhone by themselves. You multiply this by hundreds or thousands of people, and you can rebuild local community journalism, but in a much more cost-effective and a much more compelling way for society that loves to watch video.
I'm not quite a native, but I've been here since I was 11.
And during that time, like most Austinites, Luke Bilberry has seen his fair share of changes to the city.
I lived in Houston and Chicago, and it feels a lot more like those places.
Do you like Austin?
I do like Austin. I still do after all these years and all this change, but it doesn't really kind of feel like the town I grew up in anymore.
And the more things change, the more small local businesses, like 12th Street Books, become our link to the past.
The shop's been here for almost 22 years.
And for those 22 years, Luke has been the owner of this shop, which specializes in unique vintage books.
This was probably done in the 1850s.
Each one not only defined by the content of its pages,
Breakfast at Tiffany's, the Truman Capote novel,
but also revealing a story rich in historical significance.
First printing.
Shedding a light on Luke's love and passion for literature.
I just love them. I love being around them. I love having them. But I also love getting them into the right hands.
And getting them into the right hands has proven difficult since the pandemic began, selling to customers online.
I'm not offering any kind of curbside service, anything like that. In the 9 weeks that I've been totally shut down, I have had almost no one in here. It's the local market that's really changed a lot.
And with that change, after 22 years, Luke has decided this June he will shut his doors for good.
Locking that door for the last time is going to be a sad day. You know, it really takes a long time to assemble a meaningful collection of books, and to have them all kind of go out at once in bulk is not a happy experience. It's took a lot of work to put this collection together, and it has to be done, and the wrecking balls will be swinging before too long, so I'm saying goodbye to some old friends.
Trying to sell each and every book because 12th Street Books is no longer their home.
Been coming in here 6 days a week for almost 22 years. That's going to be a pretty big change, and I'll miss it.